Good afternoon. Welcome to the Council Connection. I am your host, Fabian Vixen. On today's podcast, we are going to have some special interviews today. Our first interview will have Carrie Frederick and India Strother from Ohio. They do a podcast called Two School Councils. Very good podcast if you would like to listen to it. We're going to be talking about assigned versus defined roles, COVID-19 pandemic, and their why in the school counseling. We're also going to have Carletta Hurt from the nation's capital discussing those same topics. Of course, we're going to have my housekeeping items and my final thought on virtual collaboration. This is the part of the show where I say, let's go. The Council Connection. I am your host, Fabian Vicks, and we have two very special guests on the line. We have India Strother and Carrie Frederick from Ohio on the line to talk with us today. How are you guys doing today?
Hi, good.
I'm doing fabulous. I'm so happy to have be a guest on your show.
Yeah, same.
I'm happy to get you guys on here. And let's go ahead and just jump on into it. How has COVID-19 slash the Rona slash coronavirus slash the Wuhan virus slash the Chinese virus, whatever you want to call it. Even, I mean, how has it affected you guys so far in this last 30 days?
I'll go first. I'm Carrie Frederick. I'm at a pretty large urban high school. So we, from a counseling perspective, we haven't had to do a whole lot. Like I was just telling you guys, we had actually wrapped up most of our part of scheduling right before our state basically closed down schools. So at this point, most of what we're doing is kind of just, fielding emails and phone calls and questions and just reaching out to students as we're made aware of risks, or if we were already aware that there might be some risks. Whether that's academic or social emotional or both. But even like that part of it's been a little bit slow to get off the ground, because I'm in a district where a lot of the immediate concerns were more about things like how do we get these kids fed, like more of those Maslow safety concerns.
So for me, my school district, they have a series of high schools, and each high school has a certain theme. One of the school that I'm in, they're still trying to kick off that theme, but ironically, my school is surrounded by two to three major projects, so we are still in the phases of trying to get our kids. Communication with our kids first. And then if we can, we're trying to get them the laptops and any packets that they need to complete their coursework. The issue that we're having in my particular district with my particular school, because each school socioeconomically is quite different. My school is on the low socioeconomic end. Some of my kids, I'm not going to say a lot of them, their parents sent them to other places to be quarantined instead of being put, instead of staying in the project area for fear of violence, for fear of other resources, maybe food. So some of our kids have went to go to their grandparents, their cousins, their aunts, their uncles, and they're not even in the area anymore. So the initiative for them to get online, to log into Google Classroom, even with all of those things set in front of them, we might not be able to actually have the kid able to be access it will have the kid access it because they're not even in the area anymore.
Wow. Do you see, I'm gonna stay on COVID-19 for a little bit. Do you see this changing the way we do education going forward, as far as trying to be more online centric or shorter school weeks, possibly?
Go ahead, Kara.
Oh, I think we've already started to see a lot of conversations around education and what works and what doesn't. But I don't see it pushing online more. In fact, I see more of a resistance to that as people are having to deal with the realities of that and what that looks like. Even when I think about our district has kind of like a homeschool online program that some of our kids elect to do. And for a lot of the kids that choose to do that, it's they might be having some personal issues at school. So they think if I don't have to go to the school building, it'll be easier. And most of those kids come back because it's easier for them to deal with the other stuff in school and still learn than to try and do it online. And so I think we might see a few changes, but in terms of what we do online digitally, I think we're going to see maybe what I'm seeing already is people that are starting to maybe value being in a physical building with trained teachers, trained support staff, just to meet a lot of needs. So I almost see that part of it going the other way a little bit.
So I think it's going to be, in my perspective, I think it honestly depends on the population and the staff. I was, you know, Kara and I worked together at the same school for a couple of years. And so I see the distinct difference from where I was then to where I am now. Now, here with my population, I feel like it would be actually a better thing for them to do their work at home, because once they get into school, it's more of a social, there's more social aspects that and distractions that get in the way of them being able to succeed. And now that they're online, they don't have those that distraction, and that actually it seems like they're doing better, because it's like there's no, to them it's a change up. So there's no going to your teacher face to face and saying, "Can I please have extra work?" There's a fear that if I don't do it and do it now, that I won't be able to kind of slack off and then come back. And the teachers, I think, are enjoying being able to have just a change of pace, but that's only for my building. I do see that in all, I will agree with Kara that there may be some resistance for that one-on-one communication. That need to have community is very important in some places, but in other places it may not be as. So I think it's just going to be a touch and go with each, you know, different type of population.
Yeah.
I learned from one thing about this. This is new, and it's very different. I'm so used to more face-to-face interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I think as counselors, I don't want to speak for you, but for me, I think I function a lot better face-to-face, and it's a little bit more difficult to reach out to students and those stakeholders, especially like the scheduling going on right now, because we're in April and trying to get the request in and trying to meet the needs of students, especially those students that are ESE or IEP students or even 504 students.
Right.
How can we guarantee the accommodations that are set place for them, and we're at the house? That's one thing I see. That's a big struggle.
And we
haven't even talked about students that have internet at the house. We haven't talked about those students that might be with living with grandparents. We haven't talked about that student that don't have a Chromebook, or the Chromebooks don't work and you can't get to a building because it's quarantine. So
I think that our particular position is just a face-to-face community position. Whereas a teacher, like a professor, can go online and still get the job done. Whereas we have extreme amount of difficulty being able to authentically get our job done by being virtual. So I don't know. That's just my perspective on that.
Yeah, I definitely prefer face-to-face, just that being able to see kids on a regular basis. And even sometimes it's like you don't be – the kid might not be the one coming to you, or a teacher might not be telling you, but you might be the one who saw that kid, and because you know them and you there's something that you just recognize, like, hey, something's off. I need to check in on that kid. And I had told India this the other day. Like, I knew that was part of my style, but I didn't realize what a big factor that was in my style of counseling until that's been taken away from me.
Now, I guess the question then will be, can you be an effective counselor virtually as much as you could be face-to-face? Like, is it can you be as effective?
That's a $25 question right there. I mean, that's a very good question. Can we still be a great counselor? Can we still provide the ASCA model from the house?
Right.
So and we're seeing that now. That's just a big struggle. It's not like a online school like that's like Capella or Walden and nothing like that.
Right.
This is a whole new world we're being forced into for necessity, and hopefully this doesn't jeopardize anybody's job, because I think they're gonna see the value in what not just teachers, but what we do, administrators or different stakeholders.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna go into, we say style of a counselor. Now let's go into the style of our roles and duties. And one of my big hangups, not big hangups, but one of my big tools I try to advocate for counselors on is our duties, as far as assign and design duties.
Mm-hmm.
What assigned duties do you see, as far as counselors in general, can be a hindrance of us pushing an ASCA national model in our buildings? I'm gonna start with Indy on this one.
Oh Lord. Well, I'm gonna have to go back for when Carrie and I was working together. I think we were doing what, IDs?
Yeah.
Withdrawals. We were in charge of the CUME folders. There was a lot. The other duties assigned is like the devil. I mean, because if no one sees the value in what you do or knows what you do, they're assuming that you're doing nothing. Or your job isn't as strenuous. And so they want to give you more to do. I'm answering the question, right?
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Okay. So for me, like I said, where I am now, I'm free to do the ASCA model because I don't have the 504s. I don't have a lot of those things that are in my way. But there's no way you can do the ASCA model when you have 50,000 things on your plate that has nothing to do with school counseling.
Carrie, what you got?
Yeah, it's a lot of administrative paperwork kind of stuff. And so, like India said, like stuff like filling out paper withdrawal forms for kids or managing 504s is, it's one of those things. My principal and I have had many conversations where he's said, every school I've worked at, everybody I know, counselors handle 504s. And I say, me too, but I still don't understand why, because that's a special education thing. And usually it's medical. So what do you think I know that the nurse doesn't know? So a lot of it is that paperwork stuff, testing. And my district is so-so with what counselors are involved in with testing. We rarely have to do things like proctor. Usually we're kind of more involved in helping determine who needs to take certain like state tests and that piece of it. But I know some schools that counselors just handle all of the testing, which especially in a bigger building could be a job for a person to just do solely all year. It's so much to it. And then I think at least in my situation, it's gotten a little bit better. But something, especially my first year or so there, was you know, we have our principal that we report to, but there would be other people that would kind of treat you like they were your boss. So we might have a special services coordinator. Mm. We might have like our person who has a whole lot of different titles, but one of the things they do is like our district test coordinator. So you'd have people that would be very demanding on your time for stuff that was, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's usually stuff that's still for the kids. But it's kind of it feels very much like, well, I don't know who else I should ask for this, so I'm just going to throw it on the counselors. And then there's little stuff too. Like, we don't have, Fabian, I don't know if you have a counseling secretary in your building, but we do not. And so even things like managing office aides and just some of that day-to-day kind of stuff, fielding phone calls, that kind of thing, that also falls on us, which just eats up more and more of your time.
I can't say for me. I don't mean to cut anybody off.
No,
I switched schools in February.
Yeah.
So my first school, I'm in Georgia. I was in, I'll say, County A. I was there for 3.5 years. I did 504, sat in on RTI meetings. I was also the PBIS coach, picked up registration, helped with withdrawals, scheduling, and to a point where my third full year there, we had to get a new registrar because our registrar left to go to another school. So we had to basically be the registrar that year as far as FTE errors, FTE codes, putting in grades. It's just the needs of the building, but at the same time too, though, that part ate up a lot of time as far as, especially the front end, the beginning of the year. And this year we're in now, my first half of the year, I was still doing a lot of this stuff and scheduling until I left my district to a whole nother district where that building does have a secretary. There is a counselor per grade level. And all the duties I had pretty much fell off of me. And it felt so much so different. And also, I felt almost useless my first couple weeks. It's because I'm so used to doing almost everything, but not the things I needed to do.
Right.
But once I was on there a month before we went out on this hiatus, I started getting into a better rhythm of what I was doing. As far as that, still some things like putting in grades, you know, I built the master schedule for next year, and it's just a coin flip to me as far as our assigned versus design duties, because if something goes lacking, we are the catch-all.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, though, it's a necessity for it to get done, but I still try to find ways to advocate, say, hey, this is actually the role of, let's say, master scheduling is actually the role of administrator, because they need to know how they want the teacher set up, how many sections of a class you need. We just need to know what students not to put in what class. Scheduling is funny. High school, that's more of individual planning. Middle school, it just depends on how your middle school set up.
Mm-hmm.
You could say it's non-school counseling tasks if everybody's going to take a lot of the same things, unless you got a lot of kids. Like in my building, you're taking Algebra 1, Geometry, Spanish, that type of stuff. You need to make sure in the right class, and you're doing a lot of IGPs for high school. So that's the one thing I've noticed with our position. It's heads or tails. You don't get 504s, but you're going to do master scheduling.
Right.
Or you get 504s and RTIs, but you don't do testing. Or you could take the roles of a registrar, or you do the test, or you'll be the testing coordinator. So it's like we got to pick and choose. We got to pick and fight battles sometimes, and that's the one thing I hate.
Yeah.
And my previous district, I had the 504s. That was just, it is what it is, even though that's an administrator do, because we can't force teachers to give accommodations. We're not an administrator.
Right.
So it's, to me, on that, in that area, that's like you're flipping up three different quarters at the same time, four quarters and two dimes, and you might get three of them heads and three of them tails. You stuck with stuff that you don't have experience doing, or the stuff that really don't make sense.
Yeah, and it's a balance, because you also do, I mean, you want to be a team player, and there's stuff that's kind of, that is sort of like, well, it's not necessarily 100% your duty, or maybe not 100% a principal, or, you know, so you kind of have to come together, and like you said, pick your battles, like what, where you're really going to draw your line, and then where you're just going to say, okay, this is where I'm going to just shut up and do it.
I was just saying that, you know, it's also one of those things where it's almost a little bit, every school district is different. So like the 504s at my particular district, and the IATs and the testing coordinator. So like this district that I'm in now, you get a stipend to be a test coordinator or the IAT chair. Right now, I'm the IAT chair and the PSC or PBIS lead. Now, I don't get a stipend for the PBIS or the PSC, depending on what the district calls it. But the IAT chair, I do. And then another teacher, the librarian, is the testing coordinator for the building. So he gets a stipend. Versus other places where, you know, it's like, hey, this is what you're doing, and you don't get an extra for that particular job. So on a certain level, I think as counselors, we have to make sure that we pick and choose what we're able to do, and still have the balance of doing our main job and our main job well.
Yeah. And I will say, my experience at my district now and the district where I did my field work in, those are the only two I've worked in, has been, as much as administrators and teachers and people expect you to do all these extra things, the moment a kid is in crisis, they expect you to be available no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a correct way to remind them of that sometimes when they're throwing all this stuff on and you're like, hey, I need to be available for these reasons, for these emergency situations, which unfortunately happen a lot. And I expect we're going to see even more things with like anxiety and trauma after going through all the COVID stuff we are, when we get back probably next year at this point. I mean, I just think that's going to be even more extreme than I've experienced so far.
Now, what things can we do to help prepare the kids, as far as, I'm going a little bit off in here, try to tie it in a little bit. What things do you think administrators are going to expect us to do next year, as far as anxiety with students come back into the building with this type of fear? Now we're in a global pandemic. We have kids that might not want to social distance, but want to social distance and scared to come to school. What can we do as far as calming those students and those parents and various stakeholders to let them know that we are going to be okay, and what things can we do from that aspect?
Well, I think that's a hard question, because I think even at school, counselors or teachers, we still have our families and our health that we're worried about as well. And we're all kind of clinging on to what the experts are saying. You know, every time there's a briefing, whether it be your state briefing, your county briefing, or the federal briefing. I think right now for me, I'm just focusing on letting the kids know that we're in this together, and that we're going to just take it day by day. But I don't want to promise them anything right now, because I'm not sure. Everything changes from day to day anyway, even for adults. So I don't want to make a suggestion that everything is going to be normal, and then 2 weeks later, a second wave of COVID hits, and then now we're back at being virtual again. So I just try to support them, to let them know that we're going to be in it together, and the present moment, us being present right here together right now, whether it's virtually or face to face, that we're just going to take it day by day, and I'm going to be there to support them and their feelings from this COVID experience, and also just making sure that they catch up and get through school the way they're supposed to. But I think right now, no one can make real promises that everything is going to just be okay from, you know, here on out until we figure out, if we all figure it out.
No, I know it's a Saturday. I'm trying to get y'all off this call because I have just trying to enjoy the last little bit of my spring break. Are you guys on spring break?
No,
ours is over. Yeah, mine is over.
Oh, wow.
Mine was the last week of March. So when our governor, Mike DeWine, called us off, I think Friday, March the 13th, was actually our last day of being in school. For my building, Friday, March the 13th was the last day I've been in the building. So it's been about a month since I've been able to be in the building.
Yeah, my last.
Because I think we shut down earlier than everyone else, didn't we? Almost?
Well, we went the 16th because they announced it like on a Thursday, maybe a Wednesday. They announced it kind of early in the week. And we were open the following Monday, which surprised us, but there were like not very many kids there at all. But our spring break was in March also. So we're out of that.
Well, let me ask you this, then. It's going to be our last question for you guys. Tell me your why. I should have started with this one, to be honest with you, but tell me your why into school counseling. What is your why? What is your experience in education? And what turned you into school counseling? I'm going to start with Carrie on this one.
Sure. So I did not come from an education background. I worked in business, retail type environment for years. And I kind of, there are kind of a lot of culminating factors. Part of it was just clients I dealt with at work, and kind of just seeing I don't know how to say it, but just like people that were just needed something. I also was sort of unofficially mentoring several folks who were either in college or very recent college grads through a group I volunteered with, and just like seeing their need for direction. And I also have been for several years fairly involved with a lot of social justice advocacy. And it seemed like, you know, I've always had a really strong belief in the what public education can be and what it can do. And I saw it as a vehicle to kind of be able to put my money where my mouth is, sort of, and have a direct impact on kids individually, and then also just sort of on society at large, you know, in my community. So that was my why for getting into school counseling. I sort of jumped into it. Like I sort of figured out, hey, this is a good fit for me. And I started grad school like in a month period. Like it was very quick. And I loved everything about it. I loved my fieldwork experience. I've for the most part loved the job. And now that I'm into it, the kids themselves are really like the reason of what keeps me there. You know, like when we went on this sudden break, it's like I didn't realize how much I would miss some of the kids. But it really is about like those kids and just helping them grow as people.
For me, I had a situation in high school, a very traumatic situation in high school, and there was no school counselor there to help me navigate through. So when I started to explore different careers, I was going back and forth between being a psychologist or getting into law. But my aunt was a math teacher and became a principal. My other aunt was a speech pathologist. And so they sat me down and said, well, hey, you know, why don't you get the benefits of being an educator? And also be able to take, you know, your love of helping people and combine it together. And so that was kind of like my taking my lemons and making it lemonade. So I'm able to, I have a personal stake in this because of my own personal experiences, just making sure that my kiddos stay afloat and be okay. But it's one of the best decisions that I ever made, because I don't feel like I'm working until, of course, the other duties assigned come into play. But other than that, I feel like I'm actually, you know, servicing kiddos, and that's what keeps me going. So that's my why.
Well, Carrie and Ender, I appreciate you all coming on my podcast on Saturday, and
yeah,
I want y'all to continue to be safe out there, and I really do enjoy you guys' podcast. I listen to it every time you have a new episode. I appreciate the perspective you two have on counseling, and I want you to continue to do what you're doing. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for inviting us on. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Right. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. Yep. And we'll be right back with more Counsel Connection after this. Back to the Counsel Connection. I am your host, Fabian Vix. And on the line, we have Carlotta Hurt on the line, a professional school counselor. Carlotta, how you doing?
How you doing, Fabian? Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
That's no problem. We're going to go ahead and get this thing started. For the folks out there that might not know who you is or who you are, give us a little rundown about yourself, on where you're at, what grade level, how long you've been in education, your why, that type of stuff.
Oh, my goodness. I'm a small town girl, you know, from Georgia, trying to make it a nation's capital. I've been in Washington, D.C. now for 10 years. It'll be 10 years in May. Came May in 2010. And I've been a counselor. Wow, I've been in education for over 20 years, and I've been a counselor for roughly about 14 of those years. So, been doing it for a while. I actually was a school teacher, middle school teacher, and was frustrated in the classroom, and my principal encouraged me to look into counseling. I actually was just going to find something else to do. I was doing some other things creatively, and she was like, you should look into counseling, and I am forever thankful for Joyce Bugs, if you're out there listening, for putting that bug in my ear and really encouraging me to explore counseling, because it's been an amazing journey. I am thoroughly enjoying the opportunity to work. I currently work at Roosevelt State Opportunity Academy in Washington, D.C., the premier alternative school in the nation's capital. I service students 16 to 60 in grades 9 through 12. And also support adult learners who are coming back to get their high school diploma after some time away. So I am just really committed to student success, but also supporting teachers and overall communities and building students to be productive citizens. So that's me. Oh, I'm from Georgia originally, small town. Shout out to the folks in Macon.
Oh, Macon. Okay. I live in Macon, and I'm from Cairo, Georgia. Nothing like it.
Well, I grew up in Macon. I'm from a smaller town. I'm not going to mention the name. But I went to Appling Middle School, Northeast High School, home of the Raiders, go Raiders, class of 94. So, yeah, definitely proud of my Macon roots.
So you're an East Side Out Loud person.
East Side! That's right.
All right. We're going to get this thing started. So how's this quarantine treating you? What have you been doing during this hiatus?
Wow. So honestly, Fabian, I think I was one of those people who I was like, oh, you know, we'll be back soon. I'm not going to even like really pay a lot of attention to this. You know, we're going to go home for, first of all, I was fighting going home. When they said we're going to go home, I was like, oh man, this is so crazy. Like, why? And the first week we were on spring break, air quotes around spring break. And we started school the following week to kind of give us a chance to get acclimated to being at home. Because it went from distance learning to now learning from home, because we're pretty much going to be here for the rest of the school year. And I was resistant initially, just because I felt like we're going to be back in school. Like, this is only temporary. And I think probably middle of last week, a week before last, it kind of hit me like, this is like going to be for a little longer than a week or two. And that took a little bit of adjustment. I think it was like a Wednesday. I think I was in the middle of like work. And right now work for me is 8 to 3. And students we use an online platform through Microsoft Teams. And we were already online. So at my school, Roosevelt State, we were 85, like 80, 20, 80% online, 20% instruction in the classroom. So we were kind of like sort of had our toe in virtual kind of classroom setup, but not fully there because students came to school to get online. Like they weren't at home on their computers aggressively doing assignments. So it's been we're going into week three. Yeah, we're going into week three. And I think I probably hit my rhythm middle of last week where I was like, okay, I'm doing more things to be creative. I'm thinking outside the box. I'm calling my friends to come and support doing virtual discussions. I'm about to schedule some college admissions discussions. And it's really starting to embrace it. And also, from my students' perspective, understanding that they are not taking this very well. And looking at how I can possibly be a better support for them, because I know it's not easy for a lot of them for a variety of reasons. So just one day at a time, honestly, Fabian, just one day at a time. And I just say each day as it comes, and I do my best to embrace the students I know who are struggling in the most creative, you know, way possible, to let them know that we're available, that this too shall pass, and we're gonna, you know, be back in school one day. You know, maybe not before your graduation. You know, I think that's the part that's been the toughest for myself. I'm the senior counselor. So that's all of the questions I get all day long. Are we going to graduate? Is it going to be a prom? Listen, I don't know. I don't know. That's all I can say. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this pandemic has changed a lot of stuff to a new normal. And, you know, I'm in Henry County now, and they sent us a newsletter right before we went on spring break last week with about 16 pages of frequently asked questions and this and steps to go forward. And it's going to be crazy going back, because I don't know, to be honest, I hope we go back in August. Really, really truthful, I want to go back in June so I can start getting a normal, because I'm a 220-day employee. So that month, that June and July, those are the critical months to try to make sure scheduling is done and you get your counselor plan in place and everything. But this is just me thinking, I hope we don't go back to September. That sounds crazy coming from me, but I have a feeling it's a possibility we might not hit the building. The students might not hit the building in September.
Oh, definitely. Like we already told us summer school will be online. Like, it's not even a question, a contemplation. And part of me is like, I want to finish this year out. Like, 2020 is some crap, okay? Like, we just need to just, you know, when I think a meme I saw said, 2020, can you pull over? I need to get out. I'm tired of this ride. Like, I'm done. like, just pull over. I'll walk, you know. But I think... I hope they are able to let us gather in small spaces. It might not be school full out, but I think it would be great if we could gather in some smaller spaces for those students who do need some personalized attention. And what's so interesting too, Fabian, if you learn so much about people now. Like, I didn't realize how many of my coworkers really strive on personal connections. Like, that's how, like, one of our coworkers, she actually gets up, gets dressed, full makeup, hair every day. And we're literally sitting in a camera talking to kids. And she's like, I'm going to work. I got to keep my sanity. That's the only way I can stay sane. And I was like, I got a nice shirt up top, but it's pajamas on the bottom. Okay. And my comfortable socks. Plus I have a 3-year-old son. So he's here too. So it's like, you know, that part, but it's amazing how being away from people really is hard in ways that I never thought possible. Like, you just took a lot of things for granted. And it's one of my SEL questions I ask students. Like, what did you take for granted? Like, what did you not realize was important after being in quarantine, you know? Because not quarantine, but you're staying at home. You know, stay home, stay safe. Stay ready. So I tell us, because I Roosevelt stay, and so well, I say stay ready is our anthem. Like, you know, we stay ready, so we don't have to get ready. So
that virtual learning. I keep on a t-shirt, pajamas, and everybody on my cover calls, when I said to sit on the admin meeting or whatever, they say, "Hey, you sitting outside?" "Yeah, I'm gonna stay sane. Rain, sleet, snow, I'm outside because I gotta get out of the house for at least 3-4 times a day and just sit out here."
Mm-hmm.
And they and my other counselor look at me like, you're very comfortable. Like, I am, because I'm at home. I'm not wasting any clothes just to get on a virtual call. No. Mm-mm.
Right.
Not gonna do that today.
Definitely.
So now we know our roles as a counselor. We'll transition a little bit. We know our roles as far as social, emotional, career readiness, academic achievement. Let's get into these non-school counselor versus counseling roles. What non-school counseling tasks do you see as a counselor that can possibly break a program or hinder counselors from applying a national model from ASCA?
Testing.
On a daily basis.
Testing.
Okay.
Testing. I will say our school, outside of testing, they're pretty, and for me, group counseling, like a lot of academic counseling, because it is an alternative school, and most of our students are behind, or trying to catch up or want to get ahead, so that is something that's really important, and it becomes project A in the alphabet of what we need to get done. However, the biggest thing for us is just testing. I think everything else that our administration, thankfully, is very respectful of us needing time with students. We don't have class like assigned to us. We do classroom guidance lessons, but we don't have a classroom. I'm not a teacher in a classroom. I don't have hall duty. They ask to step out periodically, you know, and let students know we're there. I'm not in charge of behaviors. I don't have to run around and, you know, reprimand students for not doing what they're supposed to do. So outside of just being able to have some really good groups, I miss my groups and testing. That's really it. I mean, I've been really fortunate to be in schools that have been supportive of the role of counselors and understand what it means to be a school counselor. And I'm not there just to help, you know, cover a class or even be a classroom teacher, like be in a class, you know, 3 hours a day versus in my office supporting the needs of all students.
In what ways do you see us as counselors, how can we advocate for ourselves or our departments or our colleagues into relieving some of these non-school counselor tasks off our plates?
You know, that's a great question. And I think every school is different, but advocacy is most important in education and showing the value of what you do. Like, one thing I'm working on is a documentary called The School Counselor's In, and I really want to kind of debunk the myth of what school counselors are versus what we really do. It's like those graphics that show, like, what you do and then what you really do, what people think you do and what you actually do. And I think the narrative has to be told from our perspective and not other people's perspective. And that's the problem. We have so many other people speaking for us as counselors and who have never been a counselor, who've never worked in a school, who have no experience, making a schedule, talking to a student about losing their mother, going into a classroom and seeing a student totally disengaged, disenchanted because there's something going on with them, and being able to really speak to that student in a way that helps them find some light at the end of the tunnel. So advocacy in any way, shape, or form, whether it's articles, whether it's, you know, PDs to provide administrators and teachers with insight about what you do. Those are really important because the narrative is not being told or created by those in counselors' shoes. They're being told by other people. So whenever you get a chance as a counselor to speak up for your profession, to advocate, because even the reason we had three counselors last year, we had three counselors the last 2 years. The prior 2 years before that, they only had one counselor for over 600 students. And she advocated and advocated and advocated and pushed for them to have three counselors. And that's why we had three counselors. And now we're going to have four starting next year because they see the value in having us focused, dedicated to a group of students and not overwhelmed, because I can't imagine how she did it by herself. I had over 200 students. Yeah, and I'm a senior counselor, so it's additional duties. I have no idea how she did it. I'm like, you are like a godsend, a shero of all things. So the best advice or suggestion I could say to counselors is just advocate for yourself, and then you figure out, based on your building, what kind of advocacy will be received by those in authority.
That is the Bible. Because, you know, I was making for 3.5 years, and it's a night and day from Bill to Henry now. I got all my training and Bill, and it's totally different than Henry. I was just talking to two other counselors I'm going to have on this podcast also, and it's just night and day from going to doing this, to doing the Ask the National model, maybe master scheduling. It's the scheduling and your job is just totally different now. I'm not bashing build, no way. It just each building is different, but each building was aligned to about the same. So doing 504s, RTIs. I was the PBIS coach of my building, also backup registrar, also did withdrawals, scheduling, this, that, and on top of your counseling duties, versus just, you know, counseling duties, scheduling, right. Assist with master scheduling, that type of stuff. It's different, mm-hmm. but the building I'm at now, they say, wow, you know a lot of stuff. But yeah, because I was put in positions where I was needed to do these things, and, you know, team player type thing. So just learning, know how to do a lot of stuff can help out, especially in the building I'm at now, where some people might not know how to do it. I already have experience doing it. So it's a blessing to have that experience, but it's also a blessing to not have to be the one person that they rely on to do it, because other people are placed to do it. So I'm trying to think of anything else I can ask you while I got you on here. I can't think of nothing else unless you got something you want to ask or add.
I think, you know, I always tell people, I was a classroom teacher, and I really do think it's important for counselors to know. And that's why I think sometimes my rapport with teachers is different. When they weren't understand I was a classroom teacher. I still am certified teacher. I'm never going to let that go. But that kind of connection is important, but also counselors working to help teachers understand that just because I was not a teacher does not mean I can't empathize and understand what you are experiencing in the classroom, and don't take anything that I say as a slight or a judgment against what you're doing. I think that's the biggest thing I can encourage counselors to do, is working on building relationships with teachers in the building when it comes to coming to classrooms and doing co-leading. I'm actually working with two teachers next week on creating two sessions we can co-lead together as a classroom teacher and a counselor, because what I really want to build on, since we're in this virtual space, but also just in general, is like, how can we collaborate more so students can see us working together? Because teachers see students more than I do. Like, my students do gravitate towards me, and I am a popular person in the building, mainly because I have food, but also because I believe in relationships. But I tell teachers all the time, I say, you see Johnny more than I do, because Johnny goes to your class every day. Like, he might come in my office twice a week, but he's not gonna come out every day, you know? Some do now. I do have some students who are regulars. I call my junior counselors because they're always in my office. But they're the first line of defense to help us help students. And I want to encourage other school counselors to use that kind of narrative and language and talking to teachers and getting their support behind what you're doing. Because this is a team effort. You know, I can't work without you. And that's really important for them to understand that this is not a solo exhibition. And teachers can sometimes give us a hard time because, oh, you're in your office all day, you have this free time, you don't have kids in your face all the time. You're right, and I don't, and I made a different decision than you did, and that's fine. However, I do have other responsibilities that you don't have. I have other, you know, engagements and things I'm responsible for. So it's a balancing act, but it's not a competition. And I think it's really important. I have to encourage people And then the only thing I have to say is that if you are not on Donor's Choose, you need to get on Donor's Choose. I have been using them actively for the last 3 years, and I can say I've garnered probably over $50,000 worth of products and services. From conference registration to airline tickets to things with my kids, iPads, tablets, books, you name it. You know, I've been able to get it to support my students and snacks. Like Donor's Shoes. If you're not on Donor's Shoes, hit me up. I'm on Facebook and well, not Instagram and Twitter, and I can help you. I'm actually an ambassador, so. But Donor's Choose is the thing. That's my last little bit, my plug.
Well, Carlotta, I appreciate you jumping on their podcast for me. I really do appreciate you.
No. Thank you for inviting me. I had a great time.
It's no problem. And we'll be right back with my housekeeper idols on the Council Connection after this. This is the part of the podcast where we do some housekeeping items on here. Of course, you can follow me on the Twitter at Fade the PSC. You can also follow my podcast on Anchor. You can follow on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, and of course, Apple Podcasts. And anybody that works for Apple, if you're listening, you know, I need a new laptop for my podcast so I can be a little bit more mobile, or some Beats by Dre headphones so I can record and have that crisp sound on my podcast. You know, Apple is wonderful boy up. You can follow my counseling website, fadethecounselor.weebly.com. You can also go on anchor.fm/Fabian-Vix. That's F is a Frank, A-V-I-O-N minus V-I-C-K-S. We are bored right now. We're not bored. We're still being busy doing our job as a counselor and trying to find things to do so we won't go stir crazy. I'm still working on Ms. Laura Ross, National School Counselor of the Year, to come to the podcast. Just working on when we can get her on. And anybody that's out there that listens to the podcast want to hop in and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. You can hop on here and we can chop it up on time management, core curriculum, ask a model. We could talk about sports. Anything you want to talk about, we could talk about on here. So don't be scared to come on here. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. Also, we're looking forward to continuing to have administrators jump in on our podcast and being able to talk about their why in education and how they see education going forward and their experience with education. I don't know how ASCA is looking right now as far as going, because ASCA is still pushing forward. I want to do a special segment called the Custom Counselor Steve Sharp. I'm ready for you. I'm ready to do this now. So Steve, be ready. But other than that, just remain safe right now. We're going to come back with my final thought on virtual collaboration right after this. Fave's final thought. So right now, we are sitting at home trying to make sure we and our families are safe. Not only that, we're trying to make sure our students have what we need to be college career ready and academically prepared for the remainder of what's left of this personalized short school year and preparing them for the next level. For us, so I'm in middle school, get my 8th graders ready for high school. Or if you're in high school, getting ready for college. Or college, try to get students ready for the workforce. And everybody's taking a hit right now as far as how can I do that? I can't see my students. I can't see these candidates that are graduating from high school that want straight to the workforce, or the candidates that are going to workforce after college, or students that going to the military, those type of things. So as educators, how can we be ready for such a circumstance that we're in right now? Now, a lot of districts have tools in place right now as far as how to collaborate within the the students and district personnel and teachers and administrators. My previous county, Bibb County, is a Microsoft district, and they are using Teams to communicate with their students and their teachers and stakeholders. And one thing about Teams I did not realize until my district used it as a collaboration piece for our master scheduling meeting. Teachers could call in the students when they see them logged in and check on them, see how they're doing as far as work. So that is a great tool for students to have. My district, we use Google Classroom. We have Microsoft Office, but we use the Google platform as far as Google Meets, Google Classroom, Google Drive. Those tools they're using. Well, how can school counselors collaborate virtually? Is this a stepping stone to a more digitized education? I don't think so. Is it something that's going to possibly eliminate the position of a professional school counselor? More than likely not. But what can we use as school counselors to become more virtually accessible to each other and to our students? Like I said, I recently came to my district in February, and I had to do a quick learn on Google Classroom, which is fairly easy. Google Meets is just like Zoom, and we know the controversy with Zoom. And it's some privacy issues and some data integrity shortcomings, but that's a good tool also. I appreciate that Zoom has opened it up for free for educators, and that is something that's pretty cool. And for us to be more virtual in collaboration, I would say possibly start you doing more virtual student support meetings. Do them in the evening. It's nothing like getting out of the building for a couple of hours to keep your sanity for a support meeting. But sometimes we might need to look at possibly doing a virtual meeting once every couple months just to do check-in, especially with new counselors. Check out how they're doing. Possibly do something as far as like middle school counselor collaboration or a zone collaboration. You could meet that way, so that way you can all check on each other, bounce ideas off each other, share what works, what doesn't work, especially with smooth moves or transition activities from elementary to middle and middle to high. So that way you can don't have to always miss an email. You could just set up a meeting. So that way you could share ideas, especially teams. You could create a team for a specific people you want in that meeting. Like, let's say, for instance, I'm at a middle school and I want to work with the high school counselors as far as what their program looks like for setting it up and how they're going to do tickets for where they're coming in and what groups, how the groups will be broken down, that type of thing. That would be one way of virtual collaboration. Another way of virtual collaboration also with Teams or Google Meets or Google Drive, you can use those same tools to, you know, share classroom core curriculum, share your data, share a list of students who are EIP or IEP or 504 students that way. I can see this as a plus without losing the face-to-face necessity of being a school counselor. But there's so many things you can do to become a more virtual counselor and make it more accessible, more easy to use. It's not my normal final thought, but it's just something I've noticed over the last month. It's a lot of push to be more virtual, and I just hope we don't go to a way of, you know, face-to-face interaction with each other. It's not really how education works. Students are struggling with not having internet or a consistent meal possible. Not all students, just that small percentage. Or you have students that need to get out of the house because they might be in a home where might be some type of abuse going on. Or it's just an outlet to see their friends. I'm not saying virtual learning will overtake traditional education, but this could be another tool in our toolbox we can use to be more accessible to our students and and building relationships in that area. I want to thank you for listening to my podcast. And as always, I'm out.